This episode of the Supply Chain Brain podcast is supported by Thomson Reuters, provider of a suite of global trade products, helping companies to facilitate their importing and exporting procedures. Be sure and stick around after the discussion for a look at the company and what it offers to customers. But now, on to the podcast. The cost and complexity of supply chains is at a historic high. Where are the opportunities for saving money? Hi, everybody. I'm Bob Bowman, Editor-in-Chief of Supply Chain Brain, and this is the Supply Chain Brain podcast. How do we get supply chain expense under control? Turns out there are a number of programs and opportunities out there for cutting costs associated with importing and exporting. Some are new, while others have been around for decades, although greatly underutilized by traders. On this episode, we'll learn what's driving the need for cost optimization in supply chains and how it can be realized. Our experts are Elizabeth Connell, Senior Director of Product Management with Thomson Reuters, and Jeff Roy, Vice President of Product Management with Infor. We'll cover solutions such as the first sale and de minimis rules, foreign trade zones, and a components-based approach to reducing import duties. Now is the time to be saving money in your supply chain. Here's my conversation with Liz Connell and Jeff Roy. Liz Connell, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Bob.
And Jeff Roy, welcome as well.
Thanks, Bob.
Jeff, let me start with you. What specific challenges, from your perspective, do you see as driving the increased focus on cost optimization in the supply chain right now?
Yeah, I'd say there's really two factors that I'm seeing. One is that, of course, costs across the board are increasing: material costs, labor costs, transportation costs. And that's causing companies to look for other areas to save money. So that's one. The second is, I'd say that managing a supply chain has become more and more complex and costly, really, than ever. In between sourcing diversification, companies aren't just buying their goods from China anymore. They're trying to reduce their reliance on China, as well as mitigate the risk of disruptions in any one specific region. So you're seeing companies source goods from more places than ever before, from more suppliers than ever before. And then secondly, in terms of managing the supply chain, I'd say that the increased regulatory scrutiny, things like the Uyghur Forced Labor Protection Act, is really causing companies to have to pay more attention, spend more on systems, do a lot more in order to get their goods over the border and into the shelves. So due to this increased complexity, I'm seeing companies really looking to offset the costs that they're incurring to manage that complexity in other areas.
All against a backdrop of increasing unpredictability as to when any of these factors are going to arise in the supply chain, right?
That's right. That's right.
Liz, let me ask you your perspective on what are some of these drivers of the desire to optimize costs in the supply chain today.
Jeff did a really good job hitting the highlights. I think the only thing I'd add is that constant regulatory change and the increased duties, taxes, and fees companies are having to pay for retaliatory tariffs, increased sanctions and controls, things that are impacting sort of the bottom line. And so just finding ways to offset some of these increased duties that they have on top of all of the supply chain disruptions and risks that they're mitigating in their supply chain. So I think it's just getting more and more expensive all around. It's getting more and more complex for sure.
But there are ways to deal with it. Innovative strategies and approaches out there that supply chain specialists can implement to get the cost savings needed to meet these challenges. Jeff, would you share with me what you consider to be some of those? Maybe we could start with this idea of first sale programs. What are they and what are their benefit?
Sure. So the first sale program is something that's been around for a while, but I'm seeing it continue to increase in usage and popularity. So many importers purchase their goods from some kind of middleman. That middleman then in turn purchases it from a factory. The middleman could actually be an agent. It could be the head office of some sort of supply organization. But essentially, again, the importer is buying it from the middleman from the factory. And of course, that factory to middleman transactions at a lower price than the final transaction. So that first sale from the factory to the middleman is, again, cheaper or at a lower price than the second sale from the middleman to the importer. So the first sale doctrine allows the importer to claim that first sale value as the value of goods when importing the product. So instead of paying duty on the second sale, the marked up value between the middleman and the importer, you pay duty on that first sale transaction between the factory and the supplier. To use this program, there's a lot that has to go into setting it up. So I know there's a lot of effort involved in validating the relationship between the middleman and the factory. It has to be an arm's length transaction. It has to be well documented. Every single transaction has to have the proper documentation around it to justify that first sale value. But once it's set up and once you have a system in place to help it move efficiently, it really can provide significant value to the importer. I did say we've seen this program for quite some time. And when the retaliatory tariffs went in place, all of a sudden we saw a spike in interest of this of first sale programs. As you can imagine, if your duties are increasing, you want to try to figure out ways to reduce it. I kind of thought that you'd see a decrease in interest as companies move away from China, because as you move away from China, you're moving away from most of the retaliatory tariffs. But I think what happened is people got really used to those savings and wanted to continue realizing the benefit of it. So we're still seeing companies roll them out, new programs, expanding their existing programs, and leveraging that first sale doctrine across their entire supply chain.
But Jeff, why isn't everybody doing it? It seems like such a slam dunk. Why would you pull away from a program like that that offers those kind of savings? Are there countervailing difficulties that make it a challenge to do?
There definitely are. So like I said, first there's that setup. It can be somewhat expensive and time consuming to ensure the relationship between the middleman and the factory. And then second, that increased scrutiny on the documents. You want to make sure that you've got a very solid process in place, system in place to gather the information. And so for some companies, you've got lower volumes. It just doesn't make sense. It isn't quite worth the effort. It's when you start getting into bigger volumes where you can see some significant savings and the upfront investment really makes it worthwhile.
I would hope that in the age of digitization, that this process could indeed be automated, involving fewer manual processes and thereby making it a more attractive proposition, right?
For sure, for sure. So there are systems in place that can help you manage that ongoing transactional flow of data. You want that documentation, the information related to the import invoice. You want the first sale invoice linked to that second sale invoice. You want all the documentation around the costs all there in a digital platform. And that's how you make this a sustainable, ongoing program.
So, Liz, speaking of things that have been around for a long, long time, but companies may not be taking full advantage of it, tell me about foreign trade zones, FTZs.
Oh, my favorite topic, Bob. The foreign trade zone program has been around for a long time. I like to describe it as, well, it's a tool companies can use to eliminate or defer duty payment, reduce fees to customs, as well as reducing duties. So let me tell you a little bit about how it works and how companies reap the benefits of a foreign trade zone. So think of an FTZ like an island within the United States, where companies can import the goods into the FTZ and essentially give customs like an IOU. I'm not going to pay you duties, taxes, and fees until the goods leave this magical little island. But to do that, there's a lot of reporting and tracking and filing and proof that you've got controls in place. And then if and when the goods move into the commerce of the United States, then you pay the duties, taxes, and fees. And if they're exported, you never pay the duties at all. So there's a significant savings for many companies. Another savings would be if you're, say, an auto manufacturer bringing in parts that have high duty rates and you make a car that has a lower finished good cost to it, you get to pay that lower or what they call an inverted duty savings at the time it's shipped from the foreign trade zone. So let me kind of summarize those savings again. So you have the duty deferral, so the elimination of duty or temporary elimination of duties, which gives companies a higher cash flow. The duty elimination for things that are exported or destroyed coming out of a foreign trade zone. And then there's that inverted duty savings where you get the lower duty rate of the finished good coming out of the foreign trade zone. There's also this merchandise processing fee savings where you're not making an entry out of a foreign trade zone for every single thing leaving. You get to do a weekly entry, which allows companies to pay that merchandise processing fee only 52 times a year, which can have millions of dollars worth of savings for some companies that are doing high volumes. So it's a really great program. It's been around for a long time in the U.S. with the benefits of really trying to keep U.S. jobs here, keep the work and everything in the community. So I see a lot of companies, especially in the automotive, manufacturing, consumer goods, pharmaceutical industry, leveraging the FTZ program right now.
Okay, well, same question for you that I asked for Jeff when he talked about first sale programs. Why not everybody? Why do we keep putting out this message about FTZs all these years as if some people aren't using it or hearing it?
I have a funny story for you, Bob. I sat for my licensed customs broker's exam several years, many, many years ago. I won't tell you how long ago. And I took a course from a reputable lawyer in Boston at the time to train for it. And her answer when we got to the section on training for foreign trade zones was, the answer to the question is C. Move on. Nobody understands foreign trade zones. They're complex and confusing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's sort of the biggest fear is just people understanding what they need to do and that there are tools that can help automate the collection of this information, that the data is there and it doesn't have to be as scary and complex as I think many people fear it to be. That would be why I think many companies don't take advantage of the program. They just haven't really spent the time learning about it and are a little bit scared of it, and they shouldn't be. There's some really great lawyers and teachers out there that can help educate, especially the NAFTZ, which is the National Association for Foreign Trade Zones. They're an excellent organization that can kind of demystify the program for companies that are interested in learning more.
So maybe again, in the age of automation, it becomes more compelling or a little bit less scary, we would hope.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Liz, this is a family podcast, so I have to watch my language. I can't say anything that's too obscene. Free trade agreement. They're still out there, despite what we see as a pushback against globalization. But how can FTAs be of advantage to companies today, and why should they be considering them?
Yeah, Jeff mentioned it at the opening. I mean, supply chains are diversifying right now. It's not just a straight China to U.S. anymore. People are really looking to move their supply chains all around. And by doing that, you're really opening up the door to more free trade agreement eligibility. There's roughly 400 different FTAs globally. So there's a lot. The U.S. alone has at least 14 different free trade agreements that we participate in with 20 different countries. So there's a lot of opportunity as you're moving your supply chain around to look for these savings opportunities that can really have a huge benefit to companies. And so as they're moving, this should be another program. If you evaluated free trade agreements years ago, maybe it's a new time to look at it again.
Okay. Well, it's good to know that they're still out there and there's still a value despite this trend that we see against globalization. Maybe those are the free trade agreements involving multilateral arrangements that are the most controversial. But Jeff, tell me more about how can we break out the components of all this? How can we better understand how this all applies to companies as they're out to save money on their supply chain? Can you go into a little more detail about that part of it?
Sure. So when it comes to breaking out components, it's kind of a funny topic. I know when Liz and I were starting to think about what we could talk about, it was kind of a collection of savings areas. And this is one that I just love talking about. So what we mean by breaking out components is there are certain products that you can either import them as the thing you buy, say, for example, a jacket. But you could also import them as the separate components of that thing. Now, you can't get that granular, the zipper and the fabric, but if that jacket has a shell and a liner and is shipped on a hanger, you could break out the shell and the liner and the hanger, and each with their own duty rate. So what we see a lot of companies put in place is these kinds of programs where they break out those components where they can. And then instead of importing the goods at that higher price for the jacket, they've got a lower duty rate for the hanger, a lower duty rate for the liner, and then maybe the higher duty rate for the outer shell. So I've seen this with suit sets, with hat scarf sets, with a pair of shorts that came with a bottle opener. We see a lot of companies try to break this out, and it kind of comes to what you said earlier about information and systems in place. Anyone can do this, but what it demands is that the documentation that you've got, the data that you have, breaks out that level of information on every transaction, on your invoices, on your purchase orders, on your packing lists. And if you can't rely on your own internal systems or the systems of your suppliers to provide that data, it's going to be really hard to be able to take advantage of a program like that. So I think that's where modern systems come in place to help ensure suppliers' compliance with these types of programs, to ensure everyone has access to the information you need. And then that data can then be sent around everywhere it needs to go in terms of filing systems and ERPs and things like that. So just a fun thing to talk about, shorts with bottle openers on it, shell hanger liners, whatever it is.
Yeah,
one of those things that I talk about quite a bit.
That one I'm unfamiliar with.
I'll point you so you know where to buy one.
Okay, thank you. Liz, any other areas out there that you see growing or becoming popular with your customers?
Great question, Bob, and one that's pretty timely, actually. So de minimis is another one that's a big savings opportunity, and I think depending on the day you ask me, I could feel really good or really bad about it.
Okay, well, it's Thursday. How do you feel today?
That's a good question. So de minimis, maybe I'll just step back for a minute. As part of TIFTA, the Trade Facilitation and Trade Enforcement Act, the duty rate or the value entered for low-value shipments or these de minimis shipments used to be $200. It's now $800. So many companies over the last, say, 5 years or so or more have been moving their supply chain offshore and doing e-commerce low-value shipments to the U.S. Popular news articles you've probably read around Temu and Shein, right, doing these low-value shipments into the commerce. Over the last few years, Customs has been very vocal around having concerns around U.S. health and safety, IP infringements, labor law concerns, all this stuff around these de minimis shipments. And so it's sort of hot or cold. Are you going to save the money on your e-commerce, but you have the risk in your supply chain and customs concerns? Well, just yesterday, which was March 6th, Senator Bill Cassidy and Michael Bennett introduced the American Trade and Investment Act. Maybe you know it as the America's Act. This legislation aims to increase investment in the Western Hemisphere, so bringing those jobs nearshoring closer to us, improve trade, create jobs, all the things I mentioned around like foreign trade zones. Well, it's a big part of this act. They also added, well, not a big part, there's a lot of components to it, but they did allow, or what it's proposing, I should say, is that these de minimis shipments can be shipped from a U.S. foreign trade zone, which now you're getting the benefits of both of these savings opportunities, which would be huge. So I'm super excited watching this really closely. Previous regulations wouldn't allow this to happen. So I'll tell you, this will be sort of my number one Google flagging that I'm watching for in the coming weeks right now to make sure we see what's happening with this new act.
Liz, tell me about Thomson Reuters today. What it is that you guys are offering the marketplace?
Thanks, Bob. So Thomson Reuters offers a suite of global trade products called One Source Global Trade. And really what we're helping do is help companies facilitate their importing and exporting process by doing three major things. First, staying compliant and mitigating risks as part of the compliance program. Two, improving supply chain efficiencies, automating, saving time, because we know trade professionals are trying to do more with less these days. And then the third component of the global trade platform is really duty savings opportunities, having applications and automation around foreign trade zones and free trade agreements and all the things we talked about today, where we're really driving significant savings. Over $1 billion annually is saved by our customers on leveraging these duty deferral programs across the global trade suite. So a lot of tools to help automate and facilitate management of your trade compliance.
Jeff, what's going on over there at Infor?
So Infor is a multi-billion dollar enterprise software company. I work specifically in the Infor Nexus solution. And Infor Nexus is a supply chain management suite of products that allows companies to control the flow of goods, data, and money outside their own four walls. So ERPs are great for controlling what goes on in their four walls. But once you want to control how your suppliers are shipping the goods, how your logistics providers are moving the goods from point A to point B, how the invoice is being processed, how supply chain finance is being injected to your suppliers, all that needs a system like Infor Nexus to help collaborate and control what goes on outside your four walls. One of those products happens to be a first sale solution that can help companies automate their first sale collection of documents. So thanks for teeing that up earlier. But it really helps to control, gain visibility, eliminate delays, eliminate inefficiencies in your supply chain.
Liz Connell of Thomson Reuters and Jeff Roy of Infor, I want to thank both of you so much for educating us on all these creative ways for companies to save money in their supply chains today. Thank you very much for being with me.
Thank you, Bob, for having us.
That was my conversation with Liz Connell of Thomson Reuters and Jeff Roy of Infor, telling us about how to save money in your supply chain. We thank Thomson Reuters for sponsoring this episode. We're online at www.supplychainbrain.com, where we post a new episode of this podcast for streaming or downloading every Friday. You can also read our Think Tank blog, watch thousands of videos, and access all of our other content, including the digital edition of our magazine. Look for us on Facebook and LinkedIn. Follow us on X at SCBrain. And also watch videos on our YouTube channel. You can also download or subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. Got any comments or suggestions on this or any episode? Email me at rbowman@supplychainbrain.com. Stay well, and see you next time.